Right. Okay, so now I'm going to share the screen. Back again, here we are, the second section of Tanya. And we can see right at the beginning, it says this, you see the second section of Tanya has this kind of introduction, which is called Chinuch Katan, the education of a child, educate the child according to his way. So we're going to have a kind of little overview of what this is saying, and then we'll begin the actual beginning of this second section, which is Shah Yichud V'Emuna, the gate of unity and faith. Now, the point is here, you see, it says, compiled from books and from sages, exalted saints, pious people whose souls are in Eden, based on the first section of the recitation of the Shema. So the first section of the Shema, Shema Yisrael, hear O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And there's something very meaningful that he's going to communicate about that. And that will begin in the next chapter, or the introduction to the next chapter. But here he gives, this is written by Rabbi Shneur Zalman. Now, it is the second section of Tanya, the way we have Tanya printed today, and the way indeed it was printed in the first print, which was 1797. But the author he was not sure which section of Tanya he should put first. So he did have the idea, possibly, of putting this second section, which is about God and existence, of putting that first, and then the second section would be about the individual and the soul, and the struggle within the individual between the animal soul and the divine soul, and the striving that the person is reaching for. But in the end, he decided to put this second section second. Now, in the introduction to it, you see what he is trying to do. He's trying to teach us about love and awe of God. Now, love and awe of God are mentioned in the first section of Tanya as well, particularly in chapter 3, and then quite a number of times later on as well. So love and awe of God is a very important aspect of what Tanya is teaching. And the first section over here is really discussing the question, how can you teach a person to feel love of God? Surely, if a person is a spiritual individual, he or she naturally feels love of God. And it's just, a person thirsts for closeness to the divine. Well, that's maybe how it should be. But in fact, many people, perhaps most people, are not like that. Even in the time of Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the end of the 18th century when this book was written in Eastern Europe, even then, love of God was not something you could take for granted. And so therefore, what he wants to do is teach a way of looking at existence, contemplating existence, so that we feel love for the divine. Now, of course, when is it a good moment? When would be an appropriate time to engage in such contemplation and hopefully leading to love of the divine? What would you suggest? Yes, could anyone tell me what would you suggest about that? When would be an opportune moment for a person to engage in thinking about things which lead him or her to a feeling of love of God? Anyone? Any suggestion?
When
the birth of a child.
The birth of a child, Eleanor, that's a beautiful answer. The birth of a child. I would suggest that when a child is born, you don't have to contemplate anything in order to feel love of God. You feel what an amazing, wonderful thing that's happened. It's absolutely amazing. In a sense, it's not at that moment that you need to be looking in a book, studying something. There you've got this beautiful little baby there in the real. Do you see that point? Would anyone else like to suggest something? Chesed, would you like to suggest?
I see the point in that, and I was going to say that whenever something good happens or something that you prayed for,
yeah, but if something good happens
along the same line,
if something good happens, like you're praying for something, God forbid someone's not well and they get better, you pray for them and they get better, or as Eleanor said, a baby is born. See, those are moments when, in a very natural way, if a person is thinking about God, yes, I mean, a person with some sort of focus on God in their mind, that we're likely to...
Lady, light time is stopping again.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's my little grandson. So he's visiting. Yeah. So a person then is very happy and can easily feel a love for God. But I'm thinking of something more constant, more daily. I mean, you've been given the clue, actually, in what we've already read from the text. We only read a couple of lines, but that's already given a clue. No?
Wake up and lie down.
Yeah, go on. Say it again, Jeffrey.
When we wake in the morning and when we lie down at night.
So is it when we wake up or when we do something else?
Both. But when we lie down.
And what do we do?
And we say Shema.
Saying the Shema. Right. Saying the Shema is part of Jewish prayer. Right? So there's the morning prayer, there's the evening prayer, there's also an afternoon prayer. We don't say the Shema then, but when we pray, now when we say the Shema, for example, it says, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Blessed be the name of his glorious kingship forever and ever. And you should love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might, right? It tells us that we should love God. The Shema says we should love God. And we're saying the Shema morning and evening. There's the evening prayer, then there's before going to sleep, saying the Shema. That's another opportunity to say the Shema. So there we are saying the Shema several times a day, potentially. And it expresses this idea, the words express the idea, you should love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might. Now, how do we feel when we're saying those words? Is it just that we're saying the words, trying to read the Hebrew, get the vowels in the right place, ver or haftor? Or is it something that we feel in our heart, that when we say these words, we actually feel a love of God, or even before that, as we come up to saying the Shema, that we feel inspired and we feel a sense of love of God? Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
You're able to understand that? Okay, so that's basically what it is talking about. So in this first introductory chapter about educate the child according to his way, even when he'll be old, he won't depart from it. What he explains in this chapter is that really, it would be very nice, using the imagery that we've discussed together these last few minutes, that if a person, when they come to pray in the morning, they feel a love for God in such a natural way as if a baby had just been born. Yes, a baby has just been born. Let's imagine a person feels a tremendous joyfulness at that. I remember when we had our first baby and after that, thank God, an amazing sense of joy and thanks to God. Beautiful thanks to God. Absolutely wonderful. Now imagine if a person felt that every single morning. Thank God, a new day. I remember there was a certain point when I was studying in the university. I was married then with children.
Yes.
And the university organized their students to go for a term to Israel to study in the Hebrew University. This is going back many, many years, 1971. And so that's 50 years ago, 51 years ago. So they sent me, and my wife agreed. And then later on, she, at the end of the term, she joined me as well. And we were living in Jerusalem together, a very beautiful, idyllic atmosphere with two little children. So my wife was okay with that I should go. And I went and spent some time studying in the Hebrew University. But I also spent a lot of time in Me'er Sha'arim, meeting different people, studying with different people. That's where I encountered Braslav Hasidic teachings, which I got very involved in at that point. And I remember being told about a certain Hasid. I often think about him to this day. I'm not sure what kind of Hasid he was, but he would, when he woke up in the morning and he would open the door of his home and he would look at the sky, he would say in Yiddish, "Anaya tog, a new day." What an amazing thing, a new day. He would say with such enthusiasm, as if a person had just had a baby, like Eleanor mentioned. Such a joyfulness, it's a new day. Now that kind of person, he probably doesn't have to read something in order to feel love of God. He's a natural, he feels it. And there are men and women who are like that, who feel a tremendous natural enthusiasm. But, says Rabbi Shneur Zalman in this introductory chapter, this introductory section, he says, you know what? Some people need to work on actually gaining that love. You see, he says, concerning the love of God, I'm just going to make it a little bit bigger, concerning the love of God, it says later on in the Torah, in Ekev, that's in Deuteronomy, which I command you to do it, to love God. How can you say doing relating to love, which is in the heart? And what do you mean commanding a person to love God? That's also a question. How can you command someone to love? So he says, the explanation is there are two kinds of love of God. One is the natural yearning of the soul to its creator. And that's a person for whom it's an immediate thing. That he sees a new day, he says, "Anaya tog, a new day," and he's filled with joy and filled with love of the divine. And a person like that, when confronted by the kinds of challenges that you were speaking about just before with Yaakov, you know, why is there the enslavement in Egypt? Why is there the Holocaust? Why is there this tragedy and that tragedy? This kind of person, this very inspired person, it's beyond rational explanations. He feels the love of God. Why God does things, we don't know why God does things. We don't know why God created the world. We don't know why God creates a flower. We don't know why he creates a baby, but it's a wonderful thing that he does. And we also don't understand why he does the negative things. And that's not wonderful, but all we can do is pray to God. As Ibn Ezra said, Rabbi Avraham Ibn Ezra, a great Torah sage and poet of the 11th century, he said from the 12th century, he said, from you, I run to you. From you, God, when you're doing something which is difficult for me, I run away and I run to you, back to you. So Mimcha Arutz Elecha in Hebrew. Very beautiful statement in one of his poems. So the natural, they are people, those who merit this state of Ava Rabba, this great love. So that's a very beautiful state, yet not everyone is privileged to attain this state. And so he's going to talk about the second kind of love. And the second kind of love is which every person can attain when one engages in profound contemplation in the depth of his heart on matters that arouse the love of God, which is hidden in the heart of every Jew. Now, there's a concept that in the heart of the Jew is hidden a love of God, which it's called the hidden love, which simply needs to be released, as it were, and then it will express itself. But apart from that love, there are other forms of love as well, which come from contemplation. Now, the system of contemplation that Rabbi Shneur Zalman teaches is based, and sorry, there's a little boy who's staying here and he's clearly
it's okay. It's lovely to hear a child in the background. I've spent 2 years in a pandemic, pretty much in lockdown, and I haven't heard the sound of a normal family household, so it's beautiful to hear.
Well, it's lovely for us because normally we're just an elderly couple living alone in a big house, thank God. But occasionally our children come with their children, or some of them. And so that's a pretty nice thing, thank God. So the system of contemplation that Rabbi Shneur Zalman teaches partly relates to a system of contemplation for the same purpose, to feel love of God in prayer and in life, that a very great sage who lived many centuries ago, the Rambam, Maimonides, Rabbi Moses Maimonides. Now, Rabbi Moses Maimonides, his central theme, the central theme of his manifold teachings, whether his legal works like Mishneh Torah or his philosophical writings, The Guide for the Perplexed, the central theme, many people suggest, I'm not the first one to say this, is the love of God. And an intense, very intense kind of love of God. And he talks about a system of contemplation, contemplation of existence, of nature, and of seeing how nature fits together. And he describes nature in terms of the physics of his time, and the way in which people understood the different spheres, and the way they rotate, and the way people were able then to calculate exactly, when when the moon would be seen, when the moon would rise and set, when there would be a new moon, and many other astronomical calculations about the stars that Maimonides knew very well. He wrote a section of his Mishneh Torah is about astronomy, and he saw that whole system of existence as something which can inspire love when we think about how amazing it is, God creating this. So that is one aspect of becoming inspired about God. Could be by studying physics and biology and astronomy. So Eleanor mentioned the birth of a child. Well, when you go into the way in which a human being or any life form is put together, the different kinds of cell, the way they relate to each other in the body, the different systems, the lymph system, the all kinds of different systems working within the body, the way the eye works. It's absolutely incredible. It's the most beautiful thing. And it's certainly something which can inspire a person very, very much. Now, I didn't actually do biology at GCSE level. I did a bit of biology earlier on in school. But I remember helping one of my children with her homework, and we were looking at the lymph system. And I thought, what an amazing thing, absolutely amazing. So the whole system of the body is something incredible. And of course, everything else. And so when my own children were little, we had a microscope and we would go to a pond in Springfield Park and get some pond water in a jar. And then we would look at that under the microscope and we would see rotifers, these little creatures which look as if their heads are spinning round, but it's really just the way their tentacles are waving and you can see them under the microscope. It doesn't have to be very high power. Amazing, the wonders of nature, the wonders of existence, which if you look at it in a way that this is God creating the world and keeping all these little creatures going, it's something absolutely fantastic. But in Tanya, in this part of Tanya, it speaks about it in a slightly different way. And the technical word is theosophy. Theosophy means knowledge of the divine. And the knowledge of the divine, which is in Tanya, comes from the writings of Rabbi Isaac Luria, the Kabbalist of Tzfat in the 16th century, and earlier than him from the Zohar, the sacred Zohar. And the teachings which Rabbi Shneur Zalman talks about here is the idea that there is a divine life force coming from God. Now, here we've moved into the first chapter. You see, we were looking in the introduction. Now we're looking at the first chapter, and it's called Gate of Unity and Faith. Now, unity is really the unity of all existence with the divine. And he begins this whole work. He says, let us understand, at least in a small measure, the statement in the Zohar. Right? So right away, he's quoting the Zohar. But Shema Yisrael, when we say, Hear, O Israel, that first line of the Shema is higher level unity. And the next line of the Shema, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuto, blessed be the name of his glorious kingdom forever, is the lower level unity. Now, explaining what the higher level unity is and the lower level unity is what I'm going to try and do in the next few moments. The higher level unity is really the idea, but when we say, Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one, we do not mean simply that there is one God. There are other people who serve three gods, or 10 gods, or a pantheon. We serve one God, and our God is one. It's much more than that. It's much more than that. The oneness of God is a oneness beyond the idea of counting one, two, three. The oneness of God is such a oneness that only God can have that oneness. It's a singular quality to God, that God is the only one, the essence of existence. God is the essence of existence. And when we say God is one, we're really saying that in a sense, there is only God, because all other aspects of existence are absorbed in the oneness of the divine. The oneness of God permeates everything and makes everything exist. And it's that oneness of God which is the ultimate reality. And if we were to focus on that oneness of God, we wouldn't see in front of us what you might be seeing, a computer screen, a table, walls of a room, a ceiling, a floor. We would just be seeing the divine, the infinite radiance of the divine. That's the higher level unity. And it's a form of contemplation that makes a person with their mind's eye see in that way. So when we say that line of the Shema, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one," it's as if at that moment, now obviously this takes a little bit of preparation, and that's why people might spend a bit of time working themselves into this mode of thinking, that the person with their mind's eye, they see the absolute oneness of God as the ultimate reality of everything, and Ein Od Milvado, there's nothing apart from him. So the first step is this saying, the Shema, the higher level unity, where there is only God. Now, I'm not sure if this is exactly the first step. It might be the climax, but it's a very special climax. And it's a climax where the person at that moment is inspired that God is the ultimate and only true reality. And then there's the next line in the Shema. Baruch Shem, blessed be the glory, the name of the glory of his kingship forever and ever, which it calls the lower level unity. Now, the lower level unity is when you take your hand away from your eyes and you open your eyes and you can see the world. And there is a world. Yes, there's a world with people, men, women, children, income tax, COVID-19, all the other things, vaccines, not vaccine, all the different issues, war, unfortunately. There are many different things in the world, some positive, some negative. But at the same time, there is the deep knowledge that within all of this existence is God. And so the lower level unity sees the world and even sees all the negativity in the world. But it also appreciates that within everything, in a hidden way, is God. Of course, that raises questions, as was being discussed at the end of the last session. Yes, of course, there are questions. We do not understand God. But nonetheless, God is within everything. So these are the two styles of thinking, styles of consciousness that Rabbi Shneur Zalman wants to impart to us in this book, Gate of Unity and Faith. And he begins off by talking about the idea, it's written, "Forever, O God, your word stands firm in the heavens." The Baal Shem Tov explained that your word, which you uttered, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters. These very words and letters stand firmly forever in the firmament of heaven and are forever clothed within all the heavens to give them life. So in other words, the 10 statements with which God created the world, those statements are there all the time. They are not there. He calls it here the 10 utterances. So if the 10 utterances, if the letters of the 10 utterances by which the earth was created during the 6 days of creation were to depart from it just for a moment, then existence would disappear. In other words, existence is dependent on divine energy all the time. Funnily enough, Maimonides, in his way of understanding physics and astronomy, he believed the same thing. He believed there's a constant divine energy which is making everything exist all the time. And he said, Maimonides wrote, if a person would imagine that there is no God, then there would be nothing. There would be no universe. There would be nothing at all, because the universe is totally dependent on the divine in order not just to have been created at some point in the past, but to exist at this moment. Everything in the universe depends on God. So that's how Maimonides wrote this. And he went on to say, but on the other hand, you could imagine that there's no universe and then there would just be God. So in other words, God is the essential reality, and whether or not there's a universe, well, when God created the universe, there is the universe or the many universes. So what it's saying here in Tanya, written hundreds of years after Maimonides, who wrote in the 12th century. So what it says here in Tanya is that there is an energy, a divine energy, which comes from the letters of the 10 utterances, which are the statements at the beginning of the Torah creating the world. And it's that energy which is keeping the world in existence. They created the world at the beginning, very nice, but they are also making the world exist at this moment. And that means that if you look for a moment in your room, there's a light shining, I assume, and you know there's electricity going into that light bulb. And if the electricity would stop, then the light would go out. And what Rabbi Shneur Zalman is presenting, the idea that the world is like that light, that illumination, which is kept in existence by a flow of electricity. And the flow is not electricity, it is the divine energy keeping everything in existence. So hopefully next Wednesday, we will meet again and take that a little bit further, looking at this chapter one and seeing a little bit more about the way in which the Kabbalists and the Hasidic sages explain this flow of divine energy.
Isn't that just a sort of complex way of saying that God is external and transcendent?
That God is external
and transcendent.
God is external and transcendent. Well, it's actually also saying that God is internal and immanent.
Correct.
Yes, saying both. Yes.
It's just a more complex way of saying that, isn't it?
Well, it's saying it in a more detailed way, and it's going to connect with the concept of the Hebrew language. It's going to introduce us to the special significance of the Hebrew language and ways of thinking about the immanence of God. That means the way that God is within everything around us. And when a person thinks in that kind of way, that's something which can inspire a person with a feeling of love of the divine. Okay.
That's lovely.
Thank you very much.
That was absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Right, okay. Chesed, thank you for your message just now. And I'm just checking to see if I've got your phone number. One second.
Shall I put it in the chat for you?
Hold on one second, I may have it. It ends 689.
Yes, it does.
Okay, so, you know, I'm supposed to be speaking with someone in a minute, but I would very much like to discuss this with you.
Okay.
Because there's Project L'Chaim is one thing, and what I've been continuously trying to do is to get Ephraim. Ephraim's a wonderful speaker, and to get him to record his sessions. And actually on Zoom, it's much easier to do that than before. For years, we had these little little recorders, little electronic recorders. And, but also the Aleph group, which you also come to, those are also supposed to be uploaded. So if you were able to help, I would be extremely, extremely grateful. So we'll talk about that sometime. When is a good time to talk to you? What sort of times are you available?
In the evenings will be good.
Okay. So there's someone who's supposed to have a conversation with me in a few moments, but that would be very nice. Yeah.
Okay.
Wonderful, Chesed. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you. Have a good night.
Thank you. All the best.
Thank you.
All the best.
River.
Yeah.